You are Locked On Pelicans, your daily podcast on the New Orleans Pelicans, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to another edition of Locked On Pelicans, the daily podcast covering your favorite team, the New Orleans Pelicans, and NBA as a whole, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Available on Apple Podcasts, on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm your host, Pelicans Insider, credential member of the media, and editor over at LockedOnPelicans.com, Jake Madison, at NolaJake on Twitter, here with you all on this Tuesday. The start of the back-to-back-to-back for the Pelicans, something we haven't seen in a very long time. And this tips off tonight with the Mavericks here in the Smoothie King Center. Preview that in the final segment for you guys. That's a game the Pelicans must win. I think it is a must win at this point, this late in the season, and with the stakes this high. And then we're going to talk about some other things going into this. Still want to talk about the foul situation. I know people are still heated about that, and I tried to kind of cool things with that a little bit yesterday, but I want to look at some of the other numbers related to that. I think this is an issue that's being a bit overblown, and I'll talk about, one, the numbers that back that up to a degree, and why I think this isn't as big of a deal as some people are making it out to be. And then in the second segment, we got something a little bit different. Upcoming on the Locked On NBA podcast on Thursday, David Locke, the host, is going to be interviewing NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. So I'm going to play some clips from this upcoming interview for you guys. He goes into a wide variety of topics, and we'll talk about those a little bit before, as I said, wrapping up and previewing the first game of the back-to-back-to-back. So the foul stuff, and like I said yesterday, I think this is overblown a bit. Yes, officials missed some calls against the Pelicans. No, it's not some kind of big conspiracy like everyone wants to point out. And officials miss calls in every game, and in a game that Houston led for the most part throughout the entirety of it, despite it getting kind of close to at the end, I don't think really would have made much of a difference, and I just don't think you can blame it on that. There's other reasons for that. Same thing with that Spurs loss. You know, you can look at some of the officiating, and I think that one wasn't particularly great, but it also, you know, you lost the game in other areas, not because they missed a call or two right at the very end. You can debate the validity or important, not validity, it's valid, I guess, the need for the NBA's last two-minute report, which gets released after any game that was close. And they kind of talk about missed calls and what was there, what wasn't. Usually when you watch those, it goes both ways with everything. So looking at that, I'm not overly concerned about this for the Pels. And people thinking that the Pels don't get calls, it's just not really true. When you look at this team, you see they do get calls going their way. And I'm pulling up the numbers right now. The numbers just decided to change on me. So anyway, the Pelicans actually rank in the top 10. They rank 8th in the league when it comes to opponent fouls per game. Opponents commit, on average, against the Pels, and this is the season number, and we'll look at something else here, 20.7 fouls per game against the Pels. That ranks as the 8th or 7th best in the league, depending on the website you're looking at and how they're tracking those numbers. So that's actually pretty good. And you've seen it. Anthony Davis fouled out three Suns players by himself, basically. You've seen DeMarcus Cousins do that. And then ESPN threw up the graphic that the top two players in fouls drawn per game are DeMarcus Cousins when he was healthy, and then Anthony Davis. So they're doing it more than James Harden. But people don't seem to realize this here in New Orleans. That's okay. There's a reason why. But let's look at something else before that. Now, if you change the date on things to look at this, say since the DeMarcus Cousins injury happened, and look at the difference there, the numbers do kind of bear out a bit of a different story. There, the Pelicans switched to being the 8th worst at generating fouls per game, and they dropped from their number to 8th, like I said, 8th worst in the league at 19.2 fouls per game during that span. So, one, what's changed a little bit during that, and how did they drop, they went from 20.7 to 19.8. So, since DeMarcus Cousins has been injured, it's a difference of one foul per game by the opponent. Let's think of it like that. It's not a ton. So, they drop, and you're doing that because you don't have DeMarcus Cousins, and it's as simple as that. So, the fouls per game are more or less the exact same thing. It's a 5% difference, really, if you want to look at it like that. So I don't think there's a huge disparity there, or that they need to be getting necessarily more calls than they are, because they're already top 10 in the league when it comes to it. And then it doesn't really change that much now that DeMarcus Cousins has been out. Now, you can pull the numbers, and cleaningtheglass.com has these if you have a subscription there, that you can check, you know, fouls in the restricted area and a lot more insightful data. And Alex Harari did a good job for lockedonpelicans.com going through all of that. But I think that says more about the players avoiding contact or not being guys that create contact, as I talked about again yesterday on the pod, than it does about officials missing calls or intentionally missing calls or just not being aware or kind of oblivious to this Pelicans team. Again, Holiday's numbers throughout the years, if you look at just fouls drawn, just as simple as that, it was within a couple, like 2% of his career numbers in years past. Yeah, he's taking more shots in the restricted area. That's not scaling up accordingly with the amount of calls that he's gotten in the past, so you'd expect him to get more. The percentages aren't exactly staying the same. You know, that, again, I think just has to do with him kind of trying to cut through like a knife instead of, as we talked about, going in all chaotic-like, as a Russell Westbrook does or Kyrie Irving kind of does, even though they're both really good finishers at the rim. Holiday's avoiding contact when you watch him drive. James Harden, when he drives to the rim, avoids contact. Harden and these other guys try and draw fouls on the perimeter and different things like that. I also don't think it's fair to kind of look at Harden and Anthony Davis, guys who play different positions, to try and compare them if they should be getting the same type of foul calls too. I think there's an issue with that. You know, the bigs are usually held and there's a foul under the basket before it's a shooting foul a lot of the time. There's a reason a guy like Anthony Davis doesn't have a ton of and-ones compared to other people, because when Harden feels some contact, he pulls up from mid-range or so, shoots, and goes in, and now he goes to the line to do more. They're just grabbing Davis to stop him from going up. Again, you see this bear out in the total foul calls against Pelicans opponents. Now, the Pelicans don't do a good job, and we've seen this, of taking advantage of that and then getting to the free throw line once they're in the bonus, which this puts them into. That's been a problem all year long. The Pelicans have DeMarcus Cousins, who went to the free throw line 8.2 times per game, Anthony Davis 7.8 times per game, and then it drops. Next is Holiday with just 3 times per game, Mirotić with 2.2 times per game, and that's really it. You know, no one else who's been a regular starter outside of Emeka Okafor gets to the line more than one time per game. That's on the players, not the officials missing calls. The Pelicans are doing the work to get into the bonus early. However, they're just not taking advantage of that to get there. The Pelicans rank 16th in free throw attempts per game. So right around league average, despite likely, and we'll see if I can pull the exact numbers on this, getting into the bonus earlier than most other teams because they're drawing more fouls. That's on the team. That's not on the officials, and that's on these players. These guys have never gotten to the line. So I think that says more about how they play than it does the officials. Now, all of that said, I think it's a great thing that Alvin Gentry called out the officials. The rules against players not being able to defend like they did James Harden, what happened to Drew Holiday's BS, and no one wants that. And, you know, I don't think he's looking for the greater good of the league and be like, we need to fix this. I don't think he's looking out for player safety because he didn't mention anything about player safety. I think this has to do with him being upset that the officials might have missed a call or two or those bullshit touch fouls on James Harden. So he chewed him out, rightfully so. He's railing against the system. However, it is the system in play right now, and the Pelicans maybe need to take advantage of that more. You don't get bonus points for doing things the right way when you still can suffer losses from that. You know, don't give me this martyr, tis nobler type crap. Go out and play the game the way you can best take advantage of it. That's the biggest thing, and the Pelicans aren't doing that. Or create contact and get to the line. Figure out a way to do that, too. Don't just sit there and bitch and complain. You got to do something else with it. So before we get to the Adam Silver interview, it's time to talk to you guys about the boatload of money you can make this week by betting at MyBookie at MyBookie.ag. If you haven't checked them out, this is the perfect time to get into the action. The madness of March is here, after all. Lay down some money and score big on college hoops. Join me and thousands of online players and start betting at MyBookie.ag. Are you sick and tired of getting the runaround when you try and get a payout? That's very important. Well, come join MyBookie today. and only recommend a service that's been good to me and my other listeners who have told me they've played there as well. And that's why I urge you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. Fast and without any hassles. You're wasting your time betting anywhere else, and they even have in-game live betting so you can place bets after tip-offs. So join now, and MyBookie will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus. You can enter for a chance to win their $1 million bracket challenge even still. So visit mybookie.ag today. The promo code is LockedOnNBA. That's LockedOnNBA. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. So before we preview the game tonight against the Dallas Mavericks, I do want to talk about the Adam Silver interview that's going to be coming up on Thursday's edition of Locked On NBA. And of course, make sure you listen to tomorrow's Locked On NBA, where I'll be hosting with John Krause, recapping all of Tuesday night's action, including this Pelicans Mavericks game, which hopefully is good news for the Pels, and we don't have to talk about anything bad on there. But we'll discuss that in another minute. I'm going to play a clip here, a couple of clips. We'll talk about them, and then probably later in the week, tomorrow, I'll play a few more because it's a pretty wide-ranging interview, and it's pretty interesting the different topics they get into. But let's start off talking about, you know, the idea of throwing in a kind of European soccer-style cup that I think this league wants to eventually go towards and have multiple trophies during the season to give out to teams.
I went back today and actually listened to an old interview, and I did, and one of the things you said was I would like to have more than one trophy. So what is your vision on cups, and when do you think it can ever happen?
You've done your research. I mean, I continue to covet, you know, other leagues, especially when I look at international soccer, where there's more things to play for than just one championship trophy. So back in the league office, we've looked at midseason tournaments. We've looked at playoff play-in tournaments. I would just say we're still studying it. You know, I'm balancing it against tradition. And I think there was a period there where people thought the All-Star game had outlived its usefulness, but then it bounced right back this year. And I think that came with a tweak of sorts where, you know, we changed the format, had captains, created a little different incentive for the players to be more competitive on the floor. And I thought it really worked. So we're sticking with All-Star now. I think in terms of other tournaments, we're going to study things. We're going to look at other. We're especially looking at other things around how teams move into the playoffs. Maybe that's also a way to deal with the rebuilding issue that's become so prominent in the league now. But nothing to announce yet.
So I've talked about this on the podcast before, and I think this kind of type of tournament would be a great thing. And Silver mentions this because it's going to lead into the next clip that I'm going to play. I think this disincentivizes tanking in a lot of the ways. You know, you can be kind of one of the worst teams in the West, but you still have a chance to get into the playoffs. And that chance is really all you need. What is it? Hope? You just need a little bit of hope. And that kind of can keep your fan base tied into everything. And if you can keep getting into the playoffs every year, I think that's what most teams would be comfortable with. Not necessarily competing for a title, but simply just getting in year after year after year after year after year consistently, winning consistently, and getting into the playoffs will build a fan base, even if you're getting bounced in the first round. I truly, truly think that. And I think Adam Silver understands that too, and isn't happy with teams kind of shutting down their best veteran players at the end of the season, even if it means playing younger guys that you're probably just needing to get some experience for, and you can frame it as that, but you're going to lose a bunch of games too, and that's a good thing as well, so you kind of double dip. They still don't want that because they do want a competitive thing on the court, and that's going to tie into the next clip that I'm going to play for you guys right now.
You've been forward thinking in regards to gambling. If you do get involved with gambling the way it's been talked about, do you have to eliminate anything that incentivizes losing?
That's a great question. I mean, the problem is if you put it that starkly, that any time you have a draft that rewards a team for poor performance, and reward by meaning the very purpose of the draft as we have it is to help the poorest performing teams restock with the best incoming players, I guess I can't answer that question affirmatively that we can eliminate anything. I think, though, that to the extent sports betting becomes legal, widespread in the United States, not just in Nevada, that we're going to have to especially focus on a lot of these integrity issues, and that, you know, it's, and it doesn't just go to those people who will be betting on the games, legally betting on the games, but it's something that goes to the heart of what a sports league is about, and that's competition. Now, my hesitation a little bit too is, you know, putting aside tanking, I'll say the word, which to me suggests players or coaches are intentionally losing games, and I think if I, as the commissioner, ever thought that was what was actually happening on the floor, of course we'd step in. But then there is a legitimate rebuilding. You see it in lots of businesses where an organization says we need to bring in new talent. It's going to take time to develop and train them, or we have some existing talent, and as you see sometimes in the league with young players that aren't getting a lot of minutes. So I'm not about to penalize a team for trading away a veteran to get draft picks, because that's how the league works. So finding and calibrating this is not an exact science, but we'll even have to spend that much more time focused on it if sports betting becomes legal.
Listen to Adam Silver struggle with that answer a little bit, because he kind of knows you more or less do. And this is why I think he ended up talking about, you know, the soccer style cups and other trophies to play for, giving teams other chances to win some silverware, some hardware, and look like they had a good season, even in the face of, you know, not having a very successful year. And this way it kind of dissuades tanking, because at least you can try and compete and sell that to your fan base. If you win the NBA Cup that year, even if it's less prestigious than winning the NBA Finals, it's something you can sell to your fans. You can make merchandise for, you can get people excited for that. You can sell out the games that have to do with that. I think that's a big thing. You know, Silver talks about integrity and trying to say that maybe we don't want to, you know, necessarily lose on purpose, but he does understand you play younger guys, you develop them so that you can be better for the future. And he doesn't want to get rid of that either, because I don't think that's a fair thing to do it. Otherwise, you know, rookies incoming are going to have a whole lot of a bigger struggle, especially if they're not highly drafted, highly touted rookies, than veteran players, which isn't necessarily what the NBA wants to have happen. But if you make a play-in tournament, you can have a young team that's filled with young guys that start to gel at the end of the season and maybe get in and get hot at the right time. And then all of a sudden your tanking doesn't look like tanking anymore. You played young guys that carried you into that, you know, play-in tournament or what have you. And if there's other trophies to win, maybe those guys can lead you to that too. So I think it's a way to kind of make teams stay competitive while also, you know, developing younger talent. Or if you just really want to win that cup because you need to kind of sell something to your fan base that looks like they're going to revolt, you can go for that. Or you can try and get into the playoffs through that play-in tournament, which I guess in itself is a bit of a playoff scenario, and get in that way. And it just might reduce tanking by a little bit. This year, it's kind of an epic tankathon season between a lot of the teams at the bottom. And when, you know, the Mavs the other day beat Denver, who lost again last night, and my God, are they just trying to implode. They're 10th, by the way. Discussion for another day. You know, that's where you don't want things like that to happen, but you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 teams, basically, all in competition, kind of, for the number one overall pick, and it's a pretty interesting thing. You don't want 8 teams. It's almost a third of the league kind of looking to do that. If you can reduce that to 3 or 4, which the play-in options might do, I think that's a great thing. And then with the salary cap going up because you've legalized sports betting and sports gambling, you know, you might not have teams tanking as much because they're able to spend more on good players potentially, or overpay bad players. That's also, you know, a potential issue there. So it kind of creates this bigger effect, as Silver said. It's not an exact science, but something that's going to be fairly hard to balance. But that, yeah, they probably can go out and make this work. I'll play another clip or two tomorrow in some of the things that I think are also really fascinating from this interview. I got to listen to it a little bit early. But make sure you subscribe to Locked On NBA. Of course, I'll be hosting tomorrow's edition with John Krause. And this Adam Silver's interview is going to air on Thursday in its entirety. It's definitely worth listening to because they hit on a lot of future topics with the league. So make sure you subscribe to Locked On NBA. So we've gone a little long on the podcast today, so quickly touch on some things with the Mavericks game. Not a real preview here. Mavs are not good. They're one of those tanking teams. Even the Mavericks were fined $600,000 for it in anticipation of probably a much larger fine that's coming for the other shit they've been going through, which we've talked about on the podcast before. They're 22-48 this season, basically an opposite record of the Pels here almost, with 8 more losses. That's how bad it is for them. 22-48. They're one of the slowest teams in the league pace-wise. They're in the bottom 10 offensively. They're in the bottom half defensively. Everything points to the Pelicans should be able to just win this, and it shouldn't be a problem, especially when you have Dennis Smith Jr. out there, rookie, not quite rookie of the year candidate, but guy who's played very, very well for him. He's got an ankle injury. He's going to miss tonight's game. I know Nerlens Noel was maybe banged up. He hasn't been playing a ton either for him. So we'll see how this goes. They still have Harrison Barnes, though, for the team, and that's kind of a concern because the Pelicans are not great on the wing. Etuan Moore, Darius Miller have not defended that position well this year. Salman Hill's back, but you don't think he's going to play much more than 8 minutes per game. Maybe they, at the high end, they'll double it to about 16 or so. But I don't know if him having not been in game shape and looking not great out there the other night is going to necessarily be enough to slow Harrison Barnes down. Barnes, who's averaging almost 19 points per game this year. Dirk, of course, is going to be here. Maybe one of your final chances to see him in the Smoothie King Center. 12.3 points per game. He kind of still is fun to watch. He shoots it particularly well, shooting 42.7% from deep. This Mavs team wants to take threes. They're going to. They are fifth in the league when it comes to attempts, 15th when it comes to three-point percentage. If they get hot from three and the Pels don't run them off that three-point line and try and funnel them into Davis and Okafor, this could get to be an annoying game, let's call it. I'm not going to say problem. You should still beat them. They don't rebound well. They just don't do really anything all that great. So you have to figure, you know, that you can kind of beat them on the glass like that. They do rank in the top 10 in defensive rebounding, but because they play at such a slow pace, they're not going to be able to do that as much or maybe consistently as well for the entire game if the Pelicans are just kind of blitzing them with shots and trying to attack the offensive glass, which you've seen a little bit more of recently over the past handful of games, as I think they understand the importance of this. But the Mavs don't want to really get out there and run. They'll take some bad threes. Just run them off the three-point line. You should get a victory here. It's kind of as simple as that. One thing they do not do, and they are very good at, is they don't turn the ball over much at all. So you've got to make, you know, those defensive possessions count. You're not going to get turnovers. You've got to grab defensive boards, not give up offensive boards. This team, the Mavericks, are last when it comes to offensive rebounding percentage. If they grab a couple of boards early on, it might set the tone for them. They might go after that because you know this team's going to be looking to upset the Pelicans. Not what the Pels need in this tight race, particularly with Denver starting to fall out, the Clippers starting to fade a little bit, and you're starting to see a little bit of separation now between the top eight teams and that 9 and 10 spot. Not a ton, though, and that can change in a moment. So the Pelicans desperately need to win this game to make sure that they don't fall further and further behind and at least give themselves maybe an easier run down the stretch to make the playoffs. So that's going to do it for this edition of Locked On Pelicans. Enjoy the first game of the back-to-back-to-back. Hopefully the Pelicans can get the victory. They can rest some guys late in the fourth because they're going to need it. Three games in a row, three games in three nights, five games in 6 days. What is it? Seven games in 8 days, something like that, or more than that, or eight games in 9 days. I forget. We've lost track here. Six games, or I don't even know, whatever the hell it is. A lot of games in a lot of days, which is definitely not what the Pelicans want to be seeing this late in this season, particularly with the playoffs on the line. So hopefully they get a win tonight. Enjoy the game, and as always, I'll be back with you guys tomorrow to recap it.